Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter Joby Warrick, author of The Triple Agent, has a new book, Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS, which is a dramatic account explaining how the strain of militant Islam behind the Islamic State first arose in a remote Jordanian prison and spread with the unwitting aid of two American presidents. The name of the book is Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS, and it's a pleasure to welcome Joby Warrick to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. I appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Joe.
What brought you to this story and to look at this account, which goes back farther than I thought it did?
Well, yeah, if you think of ISIS as like a virulent strain, like a mutated virus or something, yeah, the situation we're in right now is like a raging epidemic. And as these things usually happen, it just looks like it comes on suddenly and violently. But there's this hidden history of events that have everything to do with creating the conditions that we have now. And they go back for many years. And unfortunately, the U.S. is not innocent in how it came about.
So where, in your narrative, where does the story begin?
Well, actually, there's a bit of deja vu right now in the situation we're seeing in Syria, because the guys that founded really ideologically and also just the essence of the ISIS movement as we know it today, they cut their teeth on the fight against the Russians back in Afghanistan, two decades ago. And so what we have is figures like Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who's really the godfather of ISIS and fought us in Iraq, going to Afghanistan as a young man because he was moved by these scenes of Muslims being killed by these sort of godless communists. And so this is where the modern jihadist movement begins. And within that movement, you get this incredibly violent cell, this radical cell that is even too dangerous for al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda distanced itself from it. And that's really the origins. And we're seeing this thing come full circle now with the Russians escalating the fight in Syria and ISIS welcoming the fight and wanting to get into it.
I want to, speaking of getting into it, I do want to delve into the subject more with a more focused intent. Let me just quickly ask you where the title Black Flags comes from.
Well, there's this ancient writing. There's the Quran, which everyone knows, but in Islam, there's these companion writings called the Hadith, and there's sort of sayings of the Prophet, and some of them are more revered than others. But there's one of the Hadiths contains this prophecy about great warriors coming from the east with black banners, wearing black clothes, with long hair and beards, and naming themselves after their hometowns. And that's exactly what these Islamists tried to emulate. They wanted to be these great warriors that were prophesied. So the symbolism is very important with them. The black clothes, the black flags, even the names they use are all kind of filled with these messages that would resonate with certain kinds of very devout Muslims.
The name of the book is Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS. When, as you say, we're in a bit of a stage of deja vu. So talk a little bit about where we are now and how that is repeating itself, which I guess is another way of saying, so how can we learn from the lesson that we went through the first time?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The thing is that's striking to me is that you have a prophetic vision that was being articulated by people like Zarqawi early in this movement, saying that we're going to light this fire here in Iraq in the 2000s, but eventually there's going to be this showdown with the great armies of the West, and then they lump into this the Russians as well, and it's going to happen in Syria. And Zarqawi articulated that very clearly in some of his speeches. And today, ISIS, in some of their literature, refers to this. They even have one of their English language magazines, which ISIS, incredibly has. It publishes magazines, and it calls one magazine Dabiq, which is the name of this town in northern Syria where this apocalypse is supposed to take place. So this is all part of their mythology. This is what they think is supposed to happen. And they also, they benefit every time that a outside power gets involved, whether it's the Americans or the Russians. If we're there on the ground in force, then that's kind of their call to the rest of the world. Look, we're being oppressed by outsiders, by these infidels. Come and help us. And that's a powerful message that they can use.
When you look at that message, the obvious question is, okay, so what do we do now?
It is a, you know, Hillary Clinton used to call it the problem from hell, and it hasn't gotten any worse, because here's a situation that, you know, through all kinds of circumstances, is a very complicated story, but we essentially have a lawless area in Syria and in a big chunk of Iraq. And this lawless area is just the exact incubator that a group like ISIS needs to kind of gather its forces, to make its plans, to raise money. And to reverse the situation, you have to deny it its sanctuary. And yet now they're so entrenched in some of these cities in Iraq, and our, you know, our allies, the Iraqis, have shown very little capability in pushing them out. So, you know, job A is to deny them a sanctuary, at least to contain them, and that's going to be a very difficult problem now, because they're in it so deeply.
What about the Russian influence?
Well, you know, the Russians, the first 24 hours or 48 hours of their bombing campaign, you know, despite their claims they were going to go after ISIS, had nothing to do with ISIS. In fact, they were 100 miles away from ISIS's strongholds. We understand that overnight some targets near Raqqa were hit. That's a Syria, that's a city in eastern Syria where ISIS has its base. But really what's happening right now is the Russians are trying to prop up the Assad government, and Assad, of course, is the, you know, number one symbol for these Islamists coming to Syria. You know, the symbol of oppression, the symbol of someone who's corrupted Islam, and it really, in propping him up, and in bringing this sort of additional, throwing this additional gasoline on the fire, it's just going to almost definitely make things worse. It's, you know, I can't imagine a good outcome coming out of this.
All right. So let's talk about the political side of this, which is makes up a major part of your story. And that is the two presidential administrations whose watch this has been on. President George W. Bush, of course, and President Barack Obama. You talk about the invasion of Iraq and what that did to inflame this. So was there any way, once that was started, were there any evacuation routes along the way?
Well, I guess the one thing that, looking back in hindsight, that was probably most unhelpful for our from our point of view is just the letting Iraq become this vacuum, which is the perfect breeding ground for the kind of extremism that we see today. So not only was, you could argue that it was quite an overreach for us to go into Iraq in the first place, and people can argue forever about that, but the greater sin was allowing sort of the dismantlement or just disintegration of the central government and all its functions, letting all the Baathists go without being compensated, without even getting their pensions, just, you know, disbanding the army. And again, people argue about whether that would have happened anyway, but as it did happen, you essentially, you know, created a power vacuum, and you put all these disaffected Iraqis on the street who were very happy to support and help someone like Zarqawi, who came in from the outside but had a strong vision, had a lot of charisma, brought weapons and money, and was this galvanizing center for the jihadist movement, the insurgency that developed there.
And then when you look at the Obama administration, what opportunities did they have?
Well, this is a more difficult one, I think, and it'll be interesting to see how history sorts this out. But the one thing that you can sort of give the administration some credit for is this was uncharted territory. We had an Arab Spring movement in which regimes are toppling left and right, including many of our allies. The Mubarak government falls in Egypt, and then you see Assad in Syria under assault. And the administration decided pretty quickly to say that Assad is an illegitimate leader, he must go, and sort of created this expectation that his regime was going to fall, but really wasn't willing to do very much about it. And so you have this civil war that develops, which becomes, again, a symbol and a cause for these extremists in Iraq to kind of move in and begin this, you know, very serious insurgency campaign there. But also there's this sense that even when there were moderates that we could have helped, when we could have sort of tipped the scale, you know, to people that would be on our side, we sat back and let others arm the real radical people. Some of the Gulf Arabs came in, the Qataris, the Kuwaitis, and backed some of these extreme Islamists and helped create a radical, you know, military within Syria that's much more powerful than anything else is on the ground. So that's where we are right now.
All right. So here's the hard question, which I think it's hard because it's, well, I don't see any. But where is the optimism?
Well, that is the hard question. I think, you know, There are some in the region that are hoping that maybe now a coalition that includes the Russians or somehow will be successful in driving out ISIS. I don't really see that happening, at least not very soon. I think I see things getting worse because so now you see Iranian forces on the ground in Syria. You see Hezbollah mobilizing to get involved. So what happens is the conflict widens. You know, eventually, you know, one has to hope this thing kind of burns itself out and sort of sensible people who are left find a political solution, but I just have a feeling we're into some very choppy waters for the next couple of years before that's resolved.
And when you say choppy waters, I mean, that indicates to me that we're going to be going down the path much like we're going down now. I mean, it's much of the same.
Yeah, and one has to hope that we resist the temptation to escalate in the sense of putting ground forces in, not only because that's I think that'd be hugely unpopular with the American people, but also would not necessarily make things better just because we become the target then. We become the sort of the rallying cry for the extremists, like let's say the infidels are here, the great superpowers here, let's all unite and fight them. It's much better for us to support our allies, to give air support, intelligence support, but hopefully give our good allies in the region the backbone to kind of fight their own battle.
I'm going to go back to an earlier question, and that is about lessons that we've learned. So are in reading the book and knowing this history, do we have the information that we need to make a change, to make sure, okay, yes, this situation is what it is, but that we learn something to prevent something like it from happening again?
I think a couple of things on that. One is just that every action, you know, no matter how well informed it seems at the time, there are always consequences, and these things have to be thought through very carefully when you're involving yourself into the affairs of another country. At the same time, there's nothing that's more dangerous in the world that we live in today than a power vacuum. And sometimes what looks like a good outcome at first, like the fall of Gaddafi, ends up being a nightmare because once the strong central government falls, then there's nothing but chaos, and it's an opportunity for some very bad people to come in. And that's happened time and time again in the Middle East in the last few years. And I think that's just the one takeaway that I see is just that you just cannot allow these vacuums to form. And whatever we can do to stop and prevent them, I think is in the U.S. interest to do so.
Joby Warrick is the author of the new book, Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS. It is published by Doubleday. Joby, thank you very much for being with us. It's a great pleasure to have your expertise on the program.
Really enjoyed it, Joe. Thanks. Good luck to you.
Thank you, and to you. The name of the book, Black Flags, The Rise of ISIS, published by Doubleday. Joby Warrick is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.